Good evening. Welcome to Real Talk Podcast Live with Willie and Terrell. Tonight, how you doing, Will?
I'm doing good.
That's what's up. Tonight we're going to talk about the Will Brown commemoration that happened over the weekend, and also the 400 year anniversary of slavery.
Yes, we would like folks to call in that actually participated in the commemoration of the Will Brown event Saturday, either with Brother Terry Muhammad or the, I think it's the Racial Justice Reconciliation Group.
Yeah.
And anyone who actually went to Washington, D.C. or is aware of what the 400-year commemoration was, and how we were forced into slavery into this country.
Yeah.
And talk about, we're gonna have a good conversation about this today, because I'm on one today, so. So I really want to get some input. So we're going to have two call-in numbers. You can call in at 402-707-3115.
Or 402-213-9328.
First of all, if you didn't know about Will Brown, he was lynched, hung, stabbed,
burned,
dragged in 1919. And if you think about it, 1919 is not that long ago.
It's not.
Really not. Cause you think of 100 years, okay. But 1964, 1968, we really started integration the whole 9 yards. So that's really not that long ago. And they had I wouldn't call it a tribute or a celebration, commemoration.
It was a commemoration of his death, and they took some of the dirt from the site where the lynching happened, and they're going to put it in a lynching museum in Montgomery.
They're going to put the dirt?
Yeah. I went to it, they got dirt from, like, they trying to get all the dirt from every place that a lynching happened across the country. So it's a lot of them in the building.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what is the, because I made it there, like, in between. What did you take or observe from your observation?
From my observation, one, I felt like it was a bunch of hypocrites standing up there talking about lynching and wanting to reconcile stuff, but it's like, come on, Don Bacon was up there. I didn't believe none of his words. Also, I just feel like if you're gonna stand up there and commemorate this Will Brown's death and lynching, and you're talking about reconciliation, what are you gonna do? What actions are they gonna do to address the disparities in this community? It's good if they got all the words, but then you got Chris Rogers up there that's advocating for a new jail for kids. It's kind of hard for me to take a lot of those people serious.
What do you say to people when you critique or criticize certain individuals in the city, and more importantly, if it's a person of your own color? So what were your thoughts about what some of the things that those folks said? Because it's, if you observe, it was hypocrisy on both sides.
Yeah.
So
for me, if I'm going to criticize you, I'm not going to do it maliciously. I'm going to have a reason to do it. And if I feel like you step in, like, I don't know. I just think my criticism of those people is valid. It's not like it's malicious. It's not like I hate them or dislike them. It's just I'm being honest. Like, the stuff they're doing is hypocritical.
You know, some people see that as beefing. Those brothers are beefing with each other.
That's what I like. For me, it's like beefing to me, the way I grew up, beefing is a whole nother thing of your life is on the line. That's what beefing mean to me. My life ain't on the line. I'm not beefing with them. They ain't trying to kill me. I ain't trying to kill them. I'm just being honest about what they doing.
And, you know, this cycle right now is election season.
Yeah.
And everybody is going to be coming here and making us promises about what they're going to do to be.
Hold on, Will. Let me fix this.
We had some technical difficulties, so we'll be right back.
All right, we back. Back to the conversation about my takeaways from the commemoration over the weekend. Again, I felt like it was a lot of hypocrites sitting up there, making a lot of false promises, and I didn't believe too many words. It's probably like two people that stood up there that I took serious. Everybody else was like, "Dude, you just up here because you the mayor. You're in your position." Is it really, what are you really doing to address these issues? Like, these people, a lot of these people been in their positions for almost 10 years or more and working in the community. And when you look at the community where Will Brown was from or where we all from, it's being neglected. So what are you really doing? Like, standing up there and saying you care is like, please prove it.
You know, and I didn't want to just, you know, skew my thoughts, my observations. Uh-huh. So I went around and I interviewed a few people.
Yep.
Just to get a sense of, was it me? How did other people receive what was given out when we're talking about this commemoration? And then moving forward, what were some of the things said concrete to be able to help, you know, resolve some of these disparities that we're talking about? And I didn't.
They didn't say nothing concrete. It was shallow words. It was nothing concrete.
So this is not really nothing new to me, and definitely shouldn't be to you as well. But I'm more concerned about, because it's almost like insanity. We keep complaining mm-hmm. about this. Every cycle, we go in a room and we talk about how these individuals or organizations are not doing what they are supposed to do in regards to solving the issues of so many disparities within the Black and Brown community.
Yeah.
But we do nothing to hold them accountable.
This is true.
We do nothing. We talk. We complain.
Yeah.
But what do we do?
I had a lot of conversations with people like over the past week, like, how do we get more people out to vote? How do we get more people to care? And like, to me, at the end of the day, it's like, a lot of times we go into people and asking them to do something, but it's just that. It's like, you're not explaining why they should be going to vote. You're not explaining the impact. You're not explaining why they should be involved. A lot of stuff is not being translated to the people properly, so the people aren't responding. Also, they're hurt, and it's been years and years of mistrust and false promises that you just walking up to them saying, go vote or else your life going to end. It's not going to change. It's a process. I don't believe it's going to take a lot to get our people back to voting like we used to in the past. It's not going to happen in a year or two. It has to be continuous engagement, continuous education, and you got to be real, and you got to actually do something. The people tired of you just coming and talking.
You know, they really try to pigeonhole Black folks and say, well, you're the only group that's not going to the polls and vote.
Well, that's false.
But the fact of the matter is, over 70 million people across this country are disenfranchised and doesn't believe in the political process anymore. And as long as we keep doing things the same way, we're going to get the same results. And you touched on a few things. How can I worry about voting if I'm worrying about survival? If I'm worrying about keeping my lights on? If I'm worrying about finding adequate housing or being able to address my medical needs? You know, most people are in a survival mode. And unless you educate them about something that's going to help them survive, you're never going to be able to get them to the polls.
No. And I think it's unfair every election, at the end of the election, oh, you people didn't go vote. Black people didn't go vote like they were supposed to. It's like, do you really look at the numbers? Because more, it's not just us not voting. It's a lot of people not voting.
And another thing is, and I harp on this all the time, so much money is being allocated to be able to do the voting and register people to vote in the whole nine yards. But most of the time, those dollars are not allocated to North and South Omaha.
And you get
a few dollars.
Yeah.
And then you expect folks who are trying to survive to be able to go out here and volunteer your service to be able to vote.
And I think the difference between us and other communities is, even though those communities don't vote either, the people that they have in leadership is at least looking out for their best interests.
Yeah. But, you know, Franklin Mir, rest in peace. And we would have to really be honest about this. Our numbers in Nebraska, particularly Nebraska, are not big enough for us to be able to accomplish this by ourselves. So what we need to be doing is being able to collaborate with Latinos and Sunnis and Mau Maus and educate them. And more importantly, man, we need to educate our returning citizens about the impact they can have in the political process once they get organized. And I think that's a missed group that a lot of people have thrown away. Uh-huh. A lot of people are afraid of. But for me, a lot of those folks are my friends, like my brothers, my uncles. So I know the importance of having those individuals back into society and being in a role to be able to take care of their families.
Yeah.
And to be able to get involved in the political process, pay their taxes and things of that nature. So I'm excited about some of the things that we must do. I'm not really worried about what other people are doing. I'm more concerned about what are we doing, because it's always about the work.
Definitely. So what was your raw emotions like standing there looking at it? Like
bullshit. It was literally bullshit. I had to really take some breaths, because you got to understand the magnitude of what we were talking about. You're talking about a black man that was taken out of a jail cell.
Yeah.
Beaten, robbed, burned. Mm-hmm. And they offered nothing. Not an apology. nothing.
And then what kind of proved the hypocrisy to me is, it wasn't somebody from this state that made sure that man had a headstone at his grave. It was somebody from somewhere else. If it was left up, I felt like if it was left up to this community, they wouldn't. It'd be 100 years. We just guessing where his body is, because, like, come on, like, it shouldn't have took 90 years for that man to get a headstone and a proper burial if they really cared.
But you have in the mindset if they was just, if there was fair. You know what I'm saying? Look, let's keep this real. We have never gotten anything by asking. They have never offered. The only way things are done is if we create, energy behind it, get people to start protesting and picketing and things of that nature. Once it brought to light, then they may, recognize that took place. But if it wasn't for other individuals, I don't think we ever would have got to this point. Miss Willie Williams, Sister Patsy Stewart, she's been doing this thing with Willie Brown for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
So why did it took 400, why did it take 40 years, and why did it take almost 400 people to come out? They should have been observing this when Willie Williams, Patsy Stewart, was doing it through Juneteenth.
And then what did they say? They marked, what is it, September 28th, Will Brown Day. So what are they really going to do on, like, a lot of people get days, but what type of action is going to take place on Will Brown Day?
Well, you know, there's a huge pot of money. There's a huge pot of money through the Nebraska Park and Recreation. And it's supposed to be for historic sites, destinations. I think Malcolm X is one of the headliners on that particular piece. So I think I'm hearing talk that they're going to have a statue put in Omaha down on the steps of the location of where they dug their dirt from.
But my thing is, don't put that statue in front of the courthouse. This is why. Most white people don't go into the courthouse. The people that need to learn about the history of lynching go further down. They're going to be at that park they rebuilding. Put the statue closer to the attractions and things like that.
So do you want this to be put into the black community, or do you want to be put into the white community? Because as you observe, Saturday, it had 65% was white.
But I think that's because I don't think this is advertised good enough in a black community. And most black people ain't showing up to the courthouse. I just think that if we're really going to be intentional about reconciliation and talking about the things from the past and telling the truth, then let's be real. We're most white. More of us is walking up those courthouse steps. Well, we're going to walk into the courthouse and say, oh, a black man was hanged here, and I'm about to go in and get hanged too. They about to give me 40 years. Like, no.
So we have Miss Gladys Harrison just over here at the door. So we're gonna have her come up here real quick before she walk out the door. You don't need no makeup. So, you know, I'm always doing things to make people uncomfortable. So we're gonna take a quick few minutes, and we're gonna introduce you to Miss Gladys Harrison. Come on, folks, I don't bite. And we're gonna introduce her, and we're gonna ask her to say a few words on what she does and what is she doing at this particular moment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Hamilton, for this impromptu interview. I really appreciate you. As Willie said, my name is Gladys Harrison. I am the owner of Big Mama's Kitchen and Catering. Big Mama, Patricia Barron. As you know, my mom passed away last March, and I'm now the owner of the restaurant. I am also a candidate for Congress. I am currently running for Nebraska's 2nd District, and I would love to bring everyone's voice to the table of the 2nd District in Washington.
I'm going to put you on the spot. I observed you down at the Willie Brown commemoration. What were your thoughts? And if elected as Congresswoman, what would you like to see done in regards to the Willie Brown whole episode?
So yes, I did go down Saturday morning for the commemoration of Mr. Willie Brown. I thought it was a nice turnout. I think more information, you know, Willie Brown was not the only person that has been lynched in public like that in Nebraska's and Omaha's history. And I want to say
George Smith.
Smith. Yeah. Thank you very much. And I just found that out today. Yeah. I was at the Afro-American bookstore. If you have not been there, go there. They have all types of literature about our history. And I was talking to Shakur.
What is Shakur?
No. He works.
No, Annette or?
Annette was in there.
But Shakur is out. He's no longer in
there. Well, Shakur, I'm saying the wrong. Nope.
Shakur Abdullah?
He works for like some Who is this horrible?
Shakur Abdullah.
He works for like a...
Reconnect or something like that.
Anyway, let's just skip that part. Anyway, so I learned that, you know, Willie Brown was not the first time this happened in Nebraska. So I do believe that there should be some type of memorial that's permanent to remind us daily the past. And, you know, we've got, for example, down there by First National Bank, you know, they have the Bulls. And they have that statue of the family, you know, that on the wagon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the only people that come through here, the pilgrims that come through here. And so, yeah, that part of our history is painful, but how are we going to remember, you know, if we don't have something that's more permanent? And I think we ought to teach more about the entire history of Omaha to our students. And it should include more history about Native Americans and the African culture, African Americans. And what was the other part you asked me? Other question?
What would you like to see happen besides just having a commemoration or just a remembrance of what took place when it comes to Willie Brown and Joseph Smith?
A memorial would be nice.
But that would be it. And you can think about that.
Yeah, I have to think about that.
But you also, what position you, what made you decide to run at this particular time in your career or life after having experienced such a tragic loss?
So my mother was a wonderful example. If you see something, if you see a problem or something you don't like, to get involved and fix it. And there's some problems that we have in Washington. There's a balance, I think, that we're missing. Washington's full of career politicians and lawyers and five-star generals and millionaire and billionaire businessmen. What we don't have enough of is everyday people like you and I representing our needs. And I'm an everyday person, just like y'all. I'm trying to pay my bills, struggling to make it, trying to make ends meet. You know, I need a healthcare option that's affordable for me. I need my grandson to go to a good school. I want to feel safe in my neighborhood. I want to be able to create more jobs through my small business. And those are all things that have led me to want to run. Again, I just don't think that there are enough people like you and I representing us in Washington, and that's why I'm running.
You know, and I'm not going to put too many more things on your plate, but we're going to be having a lot of community forums and candidate forums, and so we're going to learn more about Ms. Gladys Harrison. Her
passion. Thank you. All I had come in here to do was just bring you your phone back. But here I am in front of this camera. I didn't comb my hair today. I've been on that phone. Oh, you know what? Let me do a plug. Since I'm in here, let me do that. So today, y'all, I've been on the phone. I had catering jobs this morning. And then at about 12:30 up until about 15 minutes ago, I've been on the phone calling everybody that I know. It takes money to run a campaign. And I'm not a rich person by no means, and I don't know a bunch of rich people, but I do know a bunch of thoughtful people who I've met throughout my life. I know that I'm not the only person that's concerned about the direction our government is taking. So today is the last day of the quarter, and I'm trying to finish this quarter out strong with donations. And so I need everybody. $2 is the minimum you can donate on the website. So I know people hear my voice. Y'all got $2, $5, $10, $50, $100, whatever you got. Anything that can get me closer to my goal. And where you can go to make a donation or to sign up to volunteer or just to find out more about me and my campaign, the website is Gladys and the number 4congress.com. I was going to say something else, but I forgot. Oh, and what happens to the money? Well, it costs money to run a campaign. You know, I've got to hire a campaign staff. you know, all those mailers you get in the mail that you get flooded with around campaign time. Those things cost money. I'd like to have a video produced that launches, you know, my campaign professionally. Campaign manager, that's the person I need to hire. When I go have people to come help me knock on the doors, not all those people are volunteers. However, if you want to come volunteer, help me knock on doors, I would love that. But some people get paid, you know, for those positions. And I'm hoping that my campaign will generate money so that I can put it back into the community, you know, so I can hire some caterers here in Omaha to cater an event for me, you know, so that I can hold an event at places like Matoyer's Event Center. If y'all ain't never been there, it's a wonderful place to have an event. Shout out to Miss Lady Love, and places like The Venue, you know, but I'm hoping that my campaign can bring some money into the city, and some excitement to get people to vote. And that's the last thing I'm going to say, and I'm really going to leave because today's my daughter's birthday and I'm supposed to be eating chicken Caesar salad with her. Happy birthday, Natanya. I love you. What was the last thing I was going to say? Voting. So in order for us to really be taken seriously, and when I say us, I'm talking about all the everyday working people, everyday folks who got a small business, in order for us to get, I don't care what color you are, I don't care what part of the city you live in, I don't care who you sleeping with, but there are some things that all of us want and need. We all got to get out to vote. And please stop believing that lie that your vote doesn't count, that the system is rigged. There's a certain segment of our society that wants you to believe that, that your vote doesn't count, because they know that if you don't go out and vote, that they can continue to push their agenda in our government. So if you want to see some changes, you got to get registered to vote. Yes, if you're a felon, you can vote. You can go to Nebraska.
NDP.gov.
Or if you just Google it, how to register to vote in Nebraska, it'll come up for you. But if you're a felon, yes, you can vote. You got to be 2 years out. And off paper, not on probation and not on parole. And yes, you can vote. If you have not registered to vote, you can do it online. You can go down to the voter registration office. And I'm looking forward to hosting some events to get people to register to vote. Again, my website is GladysForCongress.com. You can make a donation there. You can sign up to volunteer. Because it's really, in order for me to bring everybody's voice to Washington, I'm going to need the help of everybody. And I surely hope that I can solicit your help. And thank you, Mr. Hamilton.
You're welcome. I can't let you do this without bringing in my guy. because, as you know, Ms. Gladys is running for second district congresswoman, and also Mr. Terrell McKinney is also running for office as well. So we're going to take a few brief minutes and basically talk to Terrell about why are you running?
Why am I running? I'm running because I feel as though there's some issues within our community that need to be addressed, and I don't feel like they're being addressed like they could. I think I'm the best person to do it because I grew up in this community. Every day I'm out in the community organizing, doing something, trying to help out and trying to give back as much as possible.
So, you know, the political office is somewhat constraining. It's only a very few people that is able to navigate and really stay on their mission.
Yeah.
So what will you do different to make sure that you stay true to not only to your constituents, but also folks in your family and looking up to you as doing the right thing?
I ain't gonna hide. I'm gonna be with the people as much as possible. That's where I get all my energy from. I can't just sit in a room and be with people. Like, I need to be able to feel the people and feel the issues. I think that's what a lot of politicians miss, and that's why they're not doing as best as they could, because they get in these offices and they forget about all the stuff they did to get in the office. Like, even if I win, which I feel like I will, When I'm not in Lincoln, I'm in Omaha, working with the people, talking to people, going to meetings, listening to people. I think that's the biggest, that's the only promise I will ever make to anybody, is that I will always listen.
You know, one of the things that I get highly peeved about is that we get individuals into office and we never see them coming back to be able to update us on different laws that are coming down the pipe. And so we don't have to find out for the last minute. Will you at least promise to come back and hold, if not monthly meetings, do a podcast, something to be able to make sure you keep in contact with the people who most of the time get left out and don't know how to navigate the system?
Yeah, that's number one. I think above all, I can't say I'm running the people for Terrell McKitty. All power to the people if I neglect the people. I just feel like, man, like, I got a good connection with the people here in Omaha, especially in North Omaha, and I can't abandon them. If I was going to abandon them, I would have just moved away. Like, I felt like it a lot of times. It's like, dang, I ain't getting where I need to be in life. Maybe I should just leave. But because this is home for me, I stay, and I feel like I need to make a difference here before I go anywhere else.
And what type of checks and balances do you think need to be put in place community-wise to ensure that our elected officials hold true to their promises?
I think the biggest checks and balances for any politician, anybody that wants to be elected, is sitting in front of the people and shutting up and just taking it in. I think a lot of times you go to these meetings and these politicians want to talk about what they're doing, and somebody in the room that's really connected in the community is like, no, that's not what's happening. You're telling a bunch of lies, and they try to shut them up. Me, if I do something wrong, tell me. I'm going to listen to you, and I'm gonna do whatever I can to change it. I don't got an ego. This is not an ego thing for me. If something wrong, tell me, and I'm going to try to fix it as best as possible.
A lot of politicians get off in the office, and they become a career. And when they become a career, then you're not really concerned about the community. It should be about doing what is right. And if you stay in there for 2 years or stay in there for 4 years, then you need to get out.
For me, this is not going to be a career of mine. I don't aspire to be in elected office for 50 years. That's not my dream. That's not what I want to do. But I think I have a unique opportunity to get in this office and make change now. But 10 years down the line, I don't want to be in this office. I want to help somebody else take my position. That's what I want to do. I don't want it to be something where people feel like I'm obligated to just keep running and running. I think other people, because other people got better ideas than me, maybe could be more effective than me. But right now, I feel like I could be the most effective, and that's what I plan to do.
I would like to see individuals who are running for office reach back and garner a young person to be able to mentor and teach them about what do you need to do in order to be a good politician and how to run for office. But I think most of the time that's lacking within our community. Mm-hmm. How are you ensure that you will not allow this to happen when you win office?
Definitely. One thing I want to do and I want to look at is trying to figure out how to have interns. Some type of internship program for kids that live in North Omaha to come to Lincoln with me as much as possible, or work with me while I'm in Omaha and doing some work. I think if you build that pipeline, that's how you get kids to start voting when they get older, is you create the relationship while they're still in school. Try to get more black kids and more kids from this area down to the legislature as much as possible. And just, honestly, for me, just still volunteering and staying connected and being a visible face.
One of the things about Ernie Chambers that I respect so much was that he had the ability to be able to stop any law that disproportionately affected North Omaha. Mm-hmm.
Filibuster,
which is very rare. And what I'm get into that is one of the reasons Washington is failing so much is because they don't have the ability to be able to go across the aisle and get things done.
Yeah.
How will you address that particular piece, being able to go across the aisle, work Republican, Democrat, independents alike, to be able to accomplish some of the things you're trying to accomplish?
For me, I think I've had a unique experience in life. Being a wrestler, I've been on teams with people from rural America to rich, poor. So I've always been able to connect with people no matter where you're from. I've had teammates that are racist or kind of got different views than me, strong opposite views than me, but we was always able to communicate and figure out how to work together. So I think I could work with anybody. As long as it's benefiting my people, I can work with you. If it's not benefiting my people, I'm going to tell you and we ain't going to work together. But as long as it's something that I feel like my people could benefit from in this district, then we could work together. I don't have an ego to where, oh, he's a Republican and he got these views. I can't talk to you. That's silly. That's poor leadership.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I think if we don't have the ability to be able to go across the aisle, be able to go across ethnic groups, you're not going to be able to accomplish anything that you're trying to do.
No.
There's only going to be one or any chambers.
Yeah.
And believe me, to be able to do that for 40 years, to be able to drive up and down the road where, man, back in 40 years ago, man, it was hanging people.
Yeah.
You know, they were shooting people, but this man has stayed true. And that's why every opportunity I get, I can't do nothing but salute this man.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't understand why certain people talk negatively about him, even though they don't know him or understand him. I think he's a man's man, and I think he's just real. And he just don't put up with the bull.
Definitely. I always respect him. Every time we've talked to each other on the phone or in person, it's been nothing but he's super kind, super nice. Just you got to get straight to the point with him. And I'm not Ernie Chambers, I'm Terrell McKinney, and I just want to tell people, like, I'm going to be me. Like, if you know me, you know that I'm going to be me regardless. A lot of people believe, like, don't compare me to him. He's him, I'm me. We're from the same district. We represent some of the same people. We got similar issues, but at the end of the day, I'm going to be me. He grew up in a different time than me, so my experiences in life are a little different than his, although we grew up in the same district. So I'm gonna just be me. That's all I could be.
You know, and this conversation is, you know, has turned political, but everything is political. Everything is political. We're having a conversation about Will Brown, but it has to lead into how do we get more elected officials and organizations working together to be able to change the disparities that is taking place in North and South Omaha. And it has to be. We have to elect and hold individuals accountable in doing the right thing. And we got to give, if it's a report card, if it's an agenda, it has to be something. And we got to stop trying to fit into everybody who come into our district, treat us like a mistress, tell us everything that we want to hear, but we never see them again and we never hold them accountable. Until we get to the point where we're not only holding them accountable, but voting consistently. It's just like a basketball team.
Yeah.
If you only put three people on the floor, how do you expect to win?
Yep.
And if you only doing it once a week or twice a week, you're going to be out of shape. So we got to be strategic about whatever we're doing, but also we're going to have to work on us.
Definitely. That's big, working on us, because we, within ourselves, we're dealing with a lot of issues that are unreconciled. So it's hard for a lot of people to go out and do anything because we got so many issues within ourselves that still need to be put on the table, and we need to hold ourselves accountable. We can't hold them accountable. We got to hold ourselves accountable.
You know, right now they're talking about trauma. They're talking about mental health.
Yeah.
Issues, and I wonder what type of effect that individuals go through by going down and hearing all the conversations about the Will Brown incident, and we don't do something tangible like getting better mental health and healthcare to be able to address these traumatic things that have taken place for over 400 years, over 500 years.
I think for me, it just was like they still don't care. They still don't get it. They still, you like that's how I felt. I didn't feel that it was genuine. I think the people from Montgomery are genuine people, and I think some of the other a few people that was up there are genuine. But as a whole, a lot of those people up there ain't for us.
But, and I wasn't really talking about those people, because at the end of the day, the cavalry's not coming, no. Okay? So the only people that can solve our problems is us. So how do we? Because it's like, you alluded to it earlier, they don't care enough about this situation to be able to do what is right. It's just like, you know, being in a war and you go to your enemy and you say, give me some bullets to fight this war. They're only going to give you a certain amount of bullets. Mm-hmm. They ain't going to give you enough to be able to overthrow them. So the thing falls upon us. What do we need to do in order for us to have a better chance at winning this war?
I strongly believe that, like, they got that council. And the one thing that stuck out to me was it was nobody my age a part of that council. It wasn't nobody from this like my generation, a part of that, a part of those conversations. Because I think although they're experienced and they're older and they seem more than us in a lot of ways, you still need our voice at the table. And without that voice, I don't think you could be as effective. That's like if I put a group together, I'm gonna try to get somebody from every walk of life that I think needs to be there, because if it's just a bunch of millennials sitting somewhere, it's not going to be effective. We don't have the experience, we don't have the knowledge or necessarily the strategies to do some stuff that older individuals might have, and they don't have the energy or the wherewithal to take the action that we might have. And I think you need to combine both, and that's how we can be effective. But we got to be real with each other, and we got to put our egos on the table and let them go.
You know, you hit on something very, very key. I looked up at, I guess that was the reconciliation group up on stage.
Yeah.
I respect a lot of those folks on the stage as an individual, but I did notice there was no young millennials up there.
No.
No young women, no young men. And when you this avoid that voice, you're really missing a lot of what is actually happening on the ground level, grassroots.
And I think the reason it was missed, because somebody like me would have stood up there and would have been straight honest about what was going on. I wouldn't have been afraid to tell them that this guy supports Trump. How can I take him serious? This dude wants to jail down here for kids. The type of our generation is more outspoken. I don't think they wanted an outspoken person up there.
What do you mean? They don't ever want an outspoken person, because, you know, I don't get invited to certain parties. I'm cool with that. But I don't go into a room and expect to be liked by everybody in the room or care. The fact of the matter is, when I see bullshit, when I hear bullshit, and when I see people who say one thing and doing another, and it's hurting our community. When I see individuals who dislike me because I don't act a certain way, but yet look at my work, you know, that's the problem. And until we realize, man, that we got to get behind closed and deal with our stuff,
yeah,
we ain't gonna never be able to go out here, man, and do anything, I think, considerable to be able to bring about change.
And I think a part of dealing with our stuff is getting some of these people out these offices that don't need to be there.
No, absolutely.
Because until that happens, there's still going to be two doors. It's still going to be two groups, because some of these people ain't walking in these rooms because they don't want to be held accountable. And as long I just don't get how you could be a politician, a leader. I don't even give care if you in an elected office. You can't call yourself a leader if you're not willing to take criticism and listen to the people that you're supposed to be helping out.
Come on, man. You know, you got certain individuals that's in office without naming the name, that you can't say anything derogatory. You can't say anything against what they or she says. And that's crazy. It's like they don't understand that grassroots are the ones on the ground. They have the pulse of the city. They have the pulse of the community. And whether you like them or not, they gotta be at the table. And you need to be funding those organizations, whether you like them or not. Charles Drew should not have to struggle.
No.
You know, African American Bookstore should not have to struggle. The Love Jazz Center should not have to struggle. But you go through any of these organizations or businesses and they are struggling. Mm-hmm. How can that be when we got more millionaire per capita than anywhere in the country? If money is not the issue, then what is?
How many black millionaires in Omaha?
Ain't that many, man. But it got about 10, 15, maybe. You'd be surprised. We got some here.
But it's most of those, I ain't going to say all because I don't know them all, but I would guarantee some of those individuals got the Willie Lynch mindset, I got mine, get yours, I ain't going to help you out mindset. I'm just sure of that. So it's some that do help, but I think it needs to be more. Also, I just, it's hard. It's hard because when you look at the income and the resources many of our community members have, it's like it's hard to ask somebody for $5 sometimes. They struggling. It's hard. So I think we gotta build within. We gotta grow our own, and we gotta support each other. We gotta stop when a black business open. Oh, they didn't have this right. They didn't have that right. Give them some time. If a year from now it's still messed up, then that's when you could probably criticize. But like the first 3 days, don't trash them. Like they still trying.
Well, I'm gonna get in trouble, but I'm always getting in trouble. You know, we got one entity that controls about $700 million.
Yep.
And if those entities would ever come together and create a economic base, just imagine having our own dealership, having our own credit union, so we wouldn't have to be dealing with the redlining. Imagine being able to build and grow our own. Every other community is doing it. Every other community is doing it. I'm not a racist.
No.
But until we have economic power, because at the end of the day, most of the people that I'm in the circle with, they're struggling because of economics.
And this goes back to the 400-year anniversary of slavery. Until this country does what it does right by us, we always going to be in a situation. It's not that I don't think we should build from within, but it's a lot of things in our way that was created by this country, and they want us to enjoy the good life, land of the free.
Good life for who?
That's what I'm saying. and all this stuff and all these phrases, but it's like everybody else, other people can come over here and within about 5 years be in a better position than us. Like, we ain't getting these opportunities like other people. They're not helping us out.
As long as we keep asking, we'll never get it.
No, you're right. But it's still... So then we got to look at it through a long-term spectrum. We got to look at it and we got to be honest with each other. It's not going... For us to get where other groups are, we're going to have to commit to like a 50-year plan. Honestly, we might not even see what the fruit of the labor is, but we got to commit to something where it's like, look, bro, like it's going to take us 50 years to even get to where they at. Because that's unless we get some reparations or things like that, which... I doubt it's going to happen because almost everybody is skating the question or trying to not do what they're really supposed to do, which give us cash, land, and equity into these companies that benefit off of slavery. Until that happens, we got to sit down and have a 50-year black agenda and a 50-year black plan.
You know,
at minimum. It might be 100 years.
You're on point. And that's what... The covenant with Black America is has laid out for us, until we get to the point where we are organizing, we got to organize. Without organization, dude, we can never move the new. But we're going to have to unlearn what we have learned.
Yep.
And we're going to have something stronger than religion per se. And that is to have our culture and our identity back and to take pride in that.
And I think that's the reason why, like, why we're at where we're at right now, too. It's because what is our, like, our identity? Because I can't, most black people can't, majority, I'm almost sure nobody can actually pinpoint where on the continent of Africa your ancestor came from. You could get close, you could say West Africa, you could kind of probably get close, but you can't exactly pinpoint what your identity is. I can't sit here and tell you I'm Guyanese or Nigerian or things like that. We just cannot do it. So we got to establish what is our identity. Are we black people? Or are we?
I'm African, man.
You African or you African American?
I'm African, man. I took the ancestry test, ancestry.com, and I was very surprised that when I got it back, that was 100% African. I was 40% Canadian, I was 20% Togo, 20% Benin, 10% Nigerian. Now I'm going to take the African ancestry.com by the end of this year,
yeah.
And it will pinpoint.
You got to do both sides, though.
It'll pinpoint, yeah. where you came from, what particular tribe you came from. So that's what I want to do, and I'm planning on going back to Africa in January.
The reason I don't like the term African-American is African is not a necessarily a, you know what I mean, like when you talk to somebody from over there, they ain't gonna let you call them African. They're like, no, I'm from Ghana, I'm from, you get what I'm saying,
right.
I'm South African, I'm Nigerian, mm-hmm. You get, like, it's hard.
Over in the motherland, dude, they don't get caught up in a lot of the stuff that we get caught up in, right?
Yeah,
they're about the collective. They're not about the individual. Mm-hmm. You know, and they introduced themselves that they were from, like, Ghana. No, I'm African.
Yeah.
That was, we're all African. We're all African. And so you need to call me, I'm African or I'm black. One or two. I'm not African American.
But I think what I'm, like, the problem is we got people that don't want you to call them African American, and then you got people that want to call them black. They and other people from other places got one central term they call each other. If you're from Cuba, you're Cuban.
Right.
If you're from Puerto Rico, you're Puerto Rican. Right. If you get, like, we still haven't, as a collective of people
in this country,
haven't. We don't. It's two terms being used right now, primarily.
But you got individuals who have bought into the European concept and believe that in order to make it, you have to basically be European and believe in their ways. And then you got individuals who, when I call a black folks only meeting, don't even want to be put in the category of being black. So until we unlearn what we have learned, until we deal with this white supremacy piece with us, to hate each other, that we don't want to be seen as being black, We still got a doll that black folks would want to be like a white person and see that being good. So we have mentally messed up, dude.
You're right.
Mentally messed up. So until we heal, and we got to have some type of, we got to be in a space where we got to have these type of conversations on why do we offend you to be African when you are African?
Like, it's like, classic was on the movie Boys in the Hood when they was young. Remember, they was in a classroom, mm-hmm. And the little boy was standing up there saying, all of us come from Africa. And then one of the boys in the room was like, I ain't no African. Mm-hmm. And he was like, yes, you are. Yeah. And that's how a lot of people feel. Like, when you call them out, like, I ain't African. I ain't look like, bro, like, you are. Yeah. I think it's changing, though. The tide is changing a little bit. More people getting more connected and more people want to know where they're from and who we are, which is great. But I think it's a years in the making type of thing. It's not because... We don't, like, when you look at education, I was talking to some students at North the other day, and they was like, one thing we wish was it was more of an emphasis on our history.
But why would white folks, look, we already know.
You're right. Why would they?
But it ain't up to them.
But the thing is, yes, you're supposed to teach your kids at home, but until we are able to fully educate our kids, independent of that system, we got to make that system work for us until we can get to a self-sufficient point in which we're not at.
But it's
happened across the country. Like in Illinois, I think it's Illinois. Like it through legislation in the state, they got it in all schools now. They got to teach African American history, like Black history, how it's supposed to be taught.
Leave it up to OPS to teach my kids anything about Black history.
You can.
It's up to us to be able to have after-school programs, have different agencies like the Malcolm X Foundation, like the Great African American Bookstore, like the Great Plains History Black History Museum. Those are the entities are supposed to be. You know, you got UNO Black Studies. Why ain't they coming in? See, we got to stop depending on other folks, what we can do for ourselves.
You're right. But I guess the trouble with that is you speak of all these organizations. One, I think it's way too many Black nonprofits.
Right.
Two, a lot of them are not doing what you just said, which is the issue. We're not educating our kids properly. We're not taking the time to tell them that you Black and what it means to be Black in America and what it means to where we from. It didn't start at slavery. It started way before.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
It's very few that are doing that. A lot of times when we, like, I've learned more out of public school and out of school than I did all while I was in public school about who I am as a man.
How many times have you visited the African American Bookstore?
I've been there a few times, but not as much as I probably should.
Now you are a very educated brother, and you seek knowledge. But most folks don't know we got an African American Bookstore.
Yep.
So it's our mindset. We got to start doing things for ourselves and supporting each other. No way in the world we're supposed to have an African American Bookstore. And Mr. Taylor and Mr. Ned, you're not gonna just go in there and just not learn anything. It's so much knowledge in that store, but you rarely see Black folks going there.
Yep.
And it's this Willie Lynch syndrome, dude. We don't support our own and each other because we believe the ice is colder. So until we change that mindset that we have when it comes to Black folks. And the only way we're going to be able to do that, we got to get behind closed doors. And I'm telling you, I raise my hand and heal, man, and forgive.
No, that's true. Like, it's the healing that needs to be done in our community is so deep. It's so, like, it's a lot. Like, we need every Black mental health psychologist, therapist, counselor on board, because the type of healing that we got to get through and we got to, it's going to take a team.
And that's
Hello.
And that's one of the things that we're working on, is to be able to have healing circles, to be able to go in and be able to be in an environment where you can go in and you can vent, and man, I'm so, you know, and then have folks tell their experiences and their testimonies. when I went to the Community Healing Network for the training to become a facilitator, they had PhDs, master's degrees, they had owners of CEOs of companies, and they was talking about all the traumatic things they were going through in order to get treated less of a person. So many of us have those experiences that we hide away in, and we never in the environment where we're able to share.
And I think another thing, we gonna have to think outside the box as far as this type, the healing circle. Maybe do a healing circle in a barbershop, a healing circle in a salon. We gonna have to meet our people directly where they at.
Where they at?
Because they not gonna walk in this room and involuntarily be like, oh, it's just not gonna happen. No, we gonna have to stand up, like, we just gotta be creative about it and be like, we just gotta meet people where they at.
And men don't like to be vulnerable, man.
But if, so take the barbershop, for instance, if everybody in the barbershop is on a good, if it, the topic is right and it's, and they feel comfortable, men feel comfortable in barbershops to talk about a lot of stuff.
Oh, man.
So.
Personal stuff, though?
Maybe.
You know, if it's a safe space.
Yeah, it
got to be a safe space.
Yeah.
I agree totally with you. You know, one of the things I do to keep grounded, I go around people, man, that just keep it real with me. Mm-hmm. You know, Will, you was an asshole today, man. Man, I see you on some stuff today, man. I see you on Facebook. You know, you should have handled that situation differently. I can go to my boy, Terry, and say, hey, man, you know, I'm just ready to just get out of this stuff. And he will say some things to me, man, and say, man, come on, man. You know, we need you, and because you are our voice for us. And it really keeps me grounded and centered about why I'm doing what I'm doing, and to understand, man, it's much bigger than me, much, much bigger than me. So I give a lot of love to about four or five guys that really keeps me grounded and keeps me motivated. But more importantly, man, my grandkids and my kids keeps me pushing this thing, man, because I just cannot imagine 10 years or 20 years from now them going through the same thing I'm going through right now. So.
No, and I think a lot of times doing this type of work, you forget to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
We so caught up in helping the people and doing what's right, and but it's also mentally draining to do a lot of this stuff. It takes you missing out on some stuff with your family. You stand up all night. It's what, 8 o'clock. Most people at home had dinner. You know, like it's the life ain't for everybody. This type of it, because it's hard.
Man, sometimes, man, I swear to God, I don't want to get out of bed sometimes, man, because you're dealing with people's lives, man.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you don't take care of yourself, or if you got a family, I paid a big cost. I know in some instances I miss some things in my kids' lives that I wish I had been there. But they understood, and I can see now that a lot of the stuff that I did, they pick up on it, and they are not followers.
Yeah.
They're not followers. They're leaders, and they're not going to just accept what people say to them.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the biggest things they do is they research. They're not going to just take everything at face value. Yeah. And me and my son had a conversation today. He said, when you speak truth to power, you know, you really do alienate some people.
You do.
Some people do get offended. And that sometimes comes to, you know, they get an attitude or ego, they dislike you, they backbite and the whole nine yards. But he's seeing how this thing is operating, man, and that people who he thinks are leaders and doing the right thing, it's not about that. It's about ego. It's about numbers. I'm just glad that we got some folks that's coming into this fight. It's a war. We're in a war.
Yeah.
and people think we got the next 20 or 30 years. We don't.
Stuff got to change now. Because I know my daughter, she's like, Dad, why you always going to these meetings? Then one day I picked her up from school, and she's like, I want to go home. I want to go to my mom's. I'm like, why? She's like, because me and my friends having a meeting at the park. And I'm like, why? She's like, oh, because we got to clean it up. And I felt so proud. I was like, I never, you know what I mean? Like, it just, I was like, oh, that's dope. I was like, that's cool. Like, so
kids learn,
I think as long as we real with our kids and as open as we can be, it'll rub off on them in a lot of ways. Definitely. And see, like, as long as you're a good father. So they know that you care. You know, they know you love them.
Yeah, like I said, man. This is a medium that we need to have in the black and brown community, and it's so important this election season. I think it's even more important to set the tone for the next 10 to 15 years that we have some type of agenda. We get new leadership in office. And I would love to see a woman, I would love to see a young millennial get in office, because they're the fighters. Mm-hmm. And they're going to say and do what is right. I don't think they're easily persuaded about the money and all that other crazy stuff. I think Gladys or even and some other folks will make good elected officials. But don't get it twisted, you know, I'm going to hold everybody accountable.
Definitely. Yeah. I want you to tell me when I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. I think we got to remember everybody's not going to be Ernie Chambers. Everybody ain't going to be 80 still fighting. I think Tupac said something. He was like, this country does something to the black man and the black woman that you don't see too many loudmouth 30 and 40 year olds anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, after that time, most people say, whatever, I'm going to live my life and I'm going to take care of me and mine. It's not too many people like that, so I think we have to do more to push the young people in our community to start taking a leadership roles and stepping into their own, because it's needed.
But also, the older generation should be reaching back.
Yes.
Should be reaching back and be pushing and elevating those individuals to be able to move into a position of power, to be able to move in a position of change. And too many times, the old guard don't want to relinquish the power. And so it behooves us to be able to get behind these young millennials, man, and guide them.
One of the best examples for me is our relationship. Not too many people be like, oh, why are you and Willie so cool? I'm like, because Willie, only person that welcomed me in with open arms and took the time to tell me what it was and mentor me and help me out and be there. Like, I can't thank you enough. And we need more people like that, like you.
But see, the thing is, and it's always about paying it forward. I saw in you so much leadership, so much potential, and if you couldn't make it and you were struggling and you had degrees, then how in the hell was anybody underneath you, or a lot of my people, able to make it? So I had to do it, because how can I say that I'm about leadership if you're not pushing other people and putting them in position to be successful? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I may have helped, but you already had all that in you. You already did. You just needed to get that little thing taken care of, and after that, man, you're flying, dude. That was the hindrance.
Yeah.
After that, you had a voice, you had a platform, and that's what made you so dangerous, man. Because most white folks see our black men as thugs, not as being good fathers.
Yeah.
Not as being educated, not as being just and fair. And that what makes you so dangerous, man, to the power that be. they wish you was out here, you know, living in the thug life, doing all that, you know, past stuff. Because at the end of the day, that way of life is not working for us.
Yep.
It has to be the new 21st century, which is education, which is building our own and growing our own entrepreneurship. That has to be the new hustle. That has to be the new game plan.
Definitely, because the results are in. You sell dope, you go into the pen, you run a street, you're either gonna die or go to jail for a long time. It's not too many people that's been in the streets that didn't go to jail, didn't get shot, or didn't die. The statistics ain't in a favor of anybody.
And for the record, folks, the majority of black men are good men. Just like any ethnic group, we have some that is bad. But all black men are not bad. And all black men are not thugs. We have black men that are committed and to their people, to their community, and to their children.
And contrary to popular belief, black fathers are the most involved fathers in the country.
Yes. And if you want to check that data out, go to the CDC. May, Father, March, we got all the data there. And when a father, that's why it was a war on black men. Because if you take the black man out the picture, what happens? Chaos.
Hurt the family.
Chaos. I mean, what can a mother do with a boy? She can't teach him how to be a man. And that's why so many of our boys gravitate to gangs, man. So many of our boys didn't have a father figure to teach them how to be a man. And I know I bumped my head plenty of times. But I told myself that I wasn't gonna be that way. That I was gonna be there for my kids, and no matter what, I'm there. And I'm just so proud of Jamel and Alexia getting ready to graduate from UNL. And then my son Damien, he's my hero, man. Been in the military for about 11 years and he got his head on so solidly, man. And I just can't do nothing but just jump up and down about my kids. But before we go, website, how people can donate to your campaign?
My website, peopleforterrellmckinney.com. You could go there, figure out who I am while I'm running, the issues that I'm going to address, and also if you want to volunteer, you can sign up to do that. And lastly, donate. Just a donate button on there. Go and donate. If you could, $5, $10, just donate anything, because it's going to take the people to support me for me to win. You could also follow me on Facebook. We have a page, Terrell McKinney for LD11. Email McKinneyforLD11@gmail.com, and hit me up. I'm responsive. I'm easy to talk to.
Okay. And we will be having a community forums where you get to meet Terrell and know more about his message and about change. And make sure you follow him on a lot of different stuff. He's involved in community and wrestling. He's part of our board. So we're very supportive of Terrell and what he's trying to accomplish. He's involved with wrestling. Been mentoring young men for a while. I observed this man. He's not a fake. He's not a phony. He's not one of these individuals that can say one thing to you and then go behind your back and say something totally different. So, we as an organization can't come out and endorse him, but Willie Hamilton, I'm riding with Terrell McKinney, and anyone that supports me, should support Terrell.
Thank you. All right. Thank y'all for tuning in. We'll see y'all next week.
Oh, one more thing. Wednesday, Hungry Club, Big Mamas, 12 to 1. Miss Carice Jackson will be the speaker, and she will be talking and educating people about dyslexia. She actually attended the first ever dyslexia conference, I want to say in Australia.
It was some
place in Europe. But this woman is doing some phenomenal work for our black children and brown children. And she's really is a warrior and an advocate for change. So to give her an opportunity, come in Wednesday, 12 to 1, have some great food, and learn more about dyslexia and what type of impact it's playing on our educational system and our children as a whole. So, and thank you for tuning in to Real Talk tonight. My name is Willie Hamilton, and Mr. Terrell McKinney, we out.
All right, we out.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.